The Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. We're back on the economy today, and the economy is always a feature story. My goodness, we are in so much trouble, but you'll never know it if you tune into the major media because they tell you nothing. But my guest today tells you what you need to know. Bob Chapman. Bob comes on regularly to give us a monthly update on what's going on. And for over 50 years, he has been on the business, economics, and political beat. He's done it as a Wall Street insider, and he does it now, publishing twice a week, an incredible international forecaster. That's the publication that he puts out, voluminous, twice a week. It's a vital resource. It certainly is for me. He keeps me posted on stuff you either never hear about at all, or what you do hear about comes out weeks, months, many months later. And even then, they sure as hell don't tell you the true story the way Bob does. Bob, welcome. My goodness. Maybe one of these days you and I are going to come on together and you're going to be a bearer of good news, but I don't think it's going to be today.
Well, I certainly am happy to hear, to be here again. And I guess you have to know what to look for in the news. And when I was young, the United States government trained me to do that. And so I did it for several years as well with the government. And so I got a pretty good idea how to do it after all these years. And so I pick out stuff that other people don't.
Oh, you sure do. And again, you've been doing it so long, Bob, and over the years you build up contacts, and most important, you get very accurate, important information. You put it out. You don't pull any punches. You explain things the way people need to hear them, and you do it with an expertise that I'm afraid too few people can match you. Certainly, going through the mainstream sources, I mean, there's nobody that approaches what you do, Bob. And, the stuff you put out is really special. I look at your information, and, sometimes I just read it with my jaw in a drop position. But of course, you've been telling the story. You've been telling it for a long time. You've seen trouble going back years, and you reported it very early on, and you update it. You update it on a twice-a-week basis, so you're reporting on new developments. What's the latest that you're seeing?
Well, gee, was told of, and I haven't seen it myself yet, Drudge Report from yesterday, put up, evidently, journalists went into the place where people were polling in New Hampshire. And I don't know whether it was one or more than one facilities, and got a voting ballot. And he gave the name of a person who was recently deceased. And there were a number of them. And so people and ballots from people who were no longer alive. And they have films of this. And so with that said, I think the Republican National Party or whatever it's called, I think they should find it and who paid who.
Well, Bob, I have written, I once wrote a major article on the way U.S. elections are held, and I discuss it every now and then in more recent articles. there are so many flaws with the U.S. electoral system. I mean, you start out with the duopoly that runs the country. So Republicans, Democrats, there is such a marginal difference between them. On major issues, there's no difference. But the power structure, the unseen people who run the country decide who will hold the top positions. And I hold all U.S. elections to be illegitimate. Corrupted even worse by the fact, and this began after the 2000 debacle, when the Supreme Court did the voting, not the public, 5-4, to make George Bush become president, even though Al Gore won the election. Popular vote and electoral vote that came out in a very belated recount months later when it was too late to manage. And the New York Times even wrote about it in something like paragraph 27 in an article explaining the final electoral vote count in Florida that was the deciding state. And whoever read that, I mean, nobody goes that well. A few people go that far into an article. They certainly did. That's what the headline should have been. Well, it was too late to matter. But we have corporations. We got a law, and I forget the name of it. I don't have it in front of me. But a law passed to put corporations in charge of our elections. Not everywhere, but in most places. I'm talking about the Diebolts and companies like them that produce electronic voting machines. And I wrote about that. I wrote about how they work. I wrote about how they're programmed, how they could be manipulated. So people go in to vote, and corporations behind the scenes do our voting for us. So people could go into New Hampshire and vote for Ron Paul, and Romney could get two votes. Not one vote, but two votes. I mean, I honestly don't know who won. Iowa was a caucus arrangement, but even that had no legitimacy, Bob, because only 4% of Iowan eligible voters showed up. 4%? I mean, talk about holding an election that turned out to be a non-election, but you'd never know it looking at the media headlines. But when voting, during actual votes, people go into a booth and cast their ballots. Most often they're doing on electronic voting machines. The corporations run them. They can rig them. I think the deal is set for Romney to be nominated. And it doesn't matter whether Ron Paul wins all of the primaries. I think the system is rigged against him to make Romney the nominee, and supposedly he won in New Hampshire. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I just have a bad feeling that Ron Paul might have been the winner, or a lot closer than the way it turned out, and he was cheated.
Well, I don't think there's any question in both the caucus and the polled election. I don't know about Iowa, but there's plenty of corruption in New England. I grew up there, so just like you did.
Oh, indeed. You remember when Mayor Curley, I think, won re-election while he was in prison or jail or whatever it was?
Well, he was in Danbury Penitentiary for wire fraud. And James Michael Curley was his name. And a machine politician. But the point here is that you're right, and I think Ron's going to have to split off as an independent, and it's going to cause considerable damage, even if he loses, and it could set in motion a powerful new party as well. So we'll have to wait and see, but there's no question that there is massive criminal activity going on, and it's by the Republican National Committee. They are criminals, because somebody had to pay somebody to do this. You're kidding me. People don't do those things voluntarily. And so whether they ever get to the bottom of it, no one will ever know.
Oh, they won't.
Anyway, the
let me ask you a question, Bob. Do you think Paul has run for the president, I forget what year, one or two times he ran as a Libertarian Party candidate. Well, the Libertarian Party, I guess, will choose their own, but do you think there's any chance that Paul will run as an independent?
He says no, but I say yes.
If he thinks he's really been hornswoggled, that would be a great incentive. And he's not shy about making comments. He's very outspoken. And, I mean, I like that kind of outspokenness on stuff that needs to be spoken out in public. And some of it even gets picked up by the major media. You can't suppress it all. And if he really feels that he's been cheated, what better incentive is there than to run as an independent presidential candidate and use the core of his campaign being, they cheated me out of the Republican nomination. A lot of people will believe him.
Yeah, the evidence is all there for any logical person. I think the key as to whether he thinks that he has been cheated or not, I should put it, is his militancy. If he cranks his campaign up, let's say there's 10 levels and he's at level 4 right now. If he cranks it up to 8, you'll know he thinks he's been cheated, and he's going to go for the jugular.
Oh, God, I hope so. I mean, let's have an interesting...
I sure do, too, because, you know, he's the last chance. And we don't get it there. We get dictatorial government and civil war. Revolutionary, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, when I look, I've been into weapons since I was a kid. And, of course, I was in the military, and I'm a veteran. And the accumulation of weapons started by Americans in a big way around 1965, 66. Because there was legislation coming up in 68 that was limiting. I just put it that way. And then I look at November of this year past, and his record fails. And December was even bigger. Now, someone's got to tell me what things that people are thinking about. If they were happy about what was going on, they wouldn't be buying AK-47s and AR-15s and Barretts and so on and so forth. We're looking at a people who are arming themselves to the teeth. Now, mind you, it's been going on since the mid-60s, and most of the people in that genre are dead. I'm probably one of the last of the Mohicans. And goodness knows how long I'll last. But the point is this. Objects of militancy are being collected. And so where does that lead? I don't know, but it's not good.
Oh, it's not good at all. It's not good at all, Bob. Lots of people are very upset. I mean, the fact that we've had people, the Occupy Wall Street movement, I mean, we haven't seen, it's not big enough. It needs to grow, but I suspect that it will grow. And I'm very heartened by the fact that people are staying the course through, shall we say, the dead of winter. We're in the middle of January. And these people continue to go out. Just imagine what could happen in the spring and the summer. I mean, this thing is only a few months old, began in mid-September. I mean, whatever the issues are, and there are plenty of issues, but the point is there are angry people, and they're all over the country, big cities, small communities, all kinds of people, young, old, men, women, working, unemployed, all kinds, veterans. I even joined an Occupy Writers movement. They added my name, and they listed me as the author of my Wall Street book. I appreciated that. And there's Occupy Police, there's an Occupy Marines. I'm sure there are others like them that I don't know about, but I spotted them, and the police are going after these people viciously, but they keep coming. They just keep coming. They take all
the police better back off, because they're in an extremely vulnerable position. Extremely.
The protesters.
No, the police.
The police
are the protesters. What they're doing is very unfair.
Oh, well,
and,
indeed.
And I'm not talking about a majority of them. There's a minority, but, you know, who knows how many think that way. But, you know, beating and macing and all these terrible things that they do to people. I mean, how can they justify it as another human being? Usually the case is that there's no militancy involved. They just want to hurt people.
they could be pretty thuggish in Chicago, Bob, where I live. It's been a while, but I read a book years back talking about repressive police around the country, and they call Chicago the police repression capital of the country. I mean, it's pretty tough to pick out one city. I mean, they're mean and nasty. In big cities and small, you can go to a small town and find some very, very nasty cops. So I don't know. Maybe Chicago has been
well,
at
maybe,
it longer.
Maybe they should stop being nasty.
Yeah, that would help.
And try to help people because, look, they're going to pay in spades. They're outnumbered incredibly. I mean, do they really think they're going to survive if there's revolution in the country? I mean, even the military, even if they could put 5 million well-trained people on the streets of America, you're talking about facing down 180 million people with weapons. 80 million of them are veterans, and half of them are combat veterans. I mean, any people in the military or law enforcement that would face that down would have to be suicidal. Even if their kill ratio is a 50 to 100 to 1, they cannot win.
You know, Bob, I have a hard time imagining that U.S. military forces are going to attack U.S. citizens, U.S. people.
Well, I agree. I don't think they'll do that. But I do think law enforcement's a problem.
I'm sorry.
I mean, can you imagine your local town with 6,000 people in it with three armed personnel carriers? Oh, give me a break.
What's on my mind?
What are they going to do, chase down wild hogs at night with their armed personnel carriers?
Oh yeah, I mean this is in Israel where the Israeli military, you know, they bring out the tanks and the bulldozers and the artillery and they just go to town. I mean as bad as things are getting here, the U.S. military have never been deployed in U.S. streets attacking. They've never come. The phrase I like is they have never come out on U.S. streets guns blazing. Even Kent State back 1972 or so, that was an isolated incident. A few rambunctious National Guard people opened fire, killed a couple of people. I mean, the same thing would happen if the U.S. military comes out. I mean, there could be some fatalities, but I just can't believe that massive numbers of U.S. forces are going to attack U.S. citizens, especially if they come out en masse, and especially, Bob, if they worry that their friends and family may be in that crowd. Do they really want to go after them?
Well, it goes one point further. If they don't act against the public as ordered by the president, who is the head of the armed forces, well, what do they do next?
Oh, that's when push comes to shove.
That's right. And, you know, does the president want to be put in jail? I mean, an unlawful order is an unlawful order. There's no way of changing it. And, you know, the people, all they want is their liberty and freedom. And that certainly very quickly now is being taken away. So it's a very problematic situation as far as policing is concerned. I'll tell you this in a nutshell. The Federal Reserve created $1 trillion, broke their own rules, and said they were swapping when they were lending to the European Central Bank, which broke their own rules, and they took of the $1 trillion off of the $600 billion, 523 banks in Europe took in about $530 billion, of which they gave about 85% of it back to the European Central Bank to hold it for them, because they don't want to lend money to other banks. They don't trust them. Isn't that a great situation?
Oh, boy.
And so what's going to happen is under the fractional banking system, the 523 banks can take the $1 trillion and prudently multiply it by 9, turning it into 10 trillion. So what they've opted to do in Europe as well as the U.S. previously and England previously is go forward with a policy of just creating endless amounts of money and credit until the whole thing falls apart. And with that said, a lot of that money is already started to come into the U.S. market. They're buying treasuries. The treasury auction for the 10-year note yesterday was oversubscribed by about 3.5. I think normal is about 2.4. And supernormal is 2%, double. In other words, if you get $1 billion worth of paper offered and they bid for $2 billion, that's healthy. But as the numbers go up, they come and become astronomical. And so when I see the foreigners buying paper bonds, I know that some of that money is going to what those institutions regard as or perceive as safe places, and that would be the U.S. dollar-denominated investments. Well, of course, that couldn't be further from the truth. But the point is, you have a change of some of that $1 to $10 trillion coming into the U.S. economy. And it's already monetized because when they take the money and they buy the treasuries, what happens is that, and I think they got 1.92%, and they're paying 1% for money. That's what the loan rate at the ECB is. So the bottom line is the money is moving from Europe, some of it, into the United States. That cranks up the economy, which means they can have a decent year this year as opposed to a bad year because all of the bad things that are going on out there. And so I had to change my estimates from a minus 1.5% for the U.S. economy for this year to a plus 1.5% to 2%. And I tend to be very conservative. It could be higher. And that's what Wall Street is saying, it'll be higher. But even they didn't figure that in. And they don't get it. They don't understand the disintermediation, as it's called, that long word that nobody knows what it means. It means money from one place to the other. And so when you figure that in, you're going to have a sideways to firm year in the economy. And as a result, you're going to have lots of inflation, and you're going to have much higher gold and silver prices.
Now, you also see, I think it never stopped, Bob, but you also see more quantitative easing, printing of money. And the more they do this and pump it into the economy, and if there are some soft spots, they can just crank up and print more. And the more they do this, the greater the inflation down the road. And you talk about a hyperinflationary depression. you say it. I think I'm getting your language wrong.
The word is disintermediation.
No, down the road. From all this money creation.
First of all, they're using Operation Twist. And that means they're selling short-term paper, 30, 60, 90, 120-day paper. And they're buying the long end of the market. And the reason they're doing that, that's a 10-year. The reason they're doing that, they're trying to drive the 10 down to about 1.58. And that 1.5 as a yield. And the reason they do that is it brings down the cost of money to the banks, which in turn are the lenders in the real estate industry. And so it takes mortgages from 4%, actually the number is 3.91, down to 3.5. That's where they want it so they can sell houses and more people can qualify. At the same time, they're not telling you this now. For months, they've been buying garbage from the banks. That's bonds which contain mortgages, MBS, CDOs, that sort of thing. And they are secretly buying these. And that's where part of the money comes from to make the increase in loans, which caused stronger figures than normal under these circumstances in the employment market. See, if the banks will lend more, there's more expansion, the small and medium-sized companies, what they do is that they lend more money, about 10% in this case over the past 6 months. And that's what's cranked the economy a little bit better than what it was. So they will announce in June, approximately, that they're going to have a QE3, when in fact it's been underway for months.
Well, indeed.
These people are real beauties.
Oh, they're real beauties,
they,
is right.
They tell the truth, if anything. I mean, they are incapable.
I mean, we really have irresponsible people up and down the line, whether it's in government, whether it's at the Fed, whether it's at the state, local, or federal level, and they persist in bad policies. They make a bad situation worse. And you've said it over and over again, you know, they can keep this thing levitating maybe a little longer, so many months, another year, whatever. Nobody knows when push is going to come to shove, but you see a very bad ending at some point.
Right, and there's no telling where it is. I mean, the amount of money that they've dumped into the European economy, I mean, they don't have to stop at 9-to-1, the banks. I mean, 3.5 years ago, it was 70-to-1.
Mm.
And their overall figures are 30-to-1. That means some of the banks are still at 70, and some of them are at 7.
And the major banks are in trouble, the European banks.
Yeah, they're the main ones that are in trouble.
They are the main ones, and I guess the European banks are the most trouble, but the U.S. banks as well, the big ones. They've got all this toxic junk on their books. They got so much of it, Bob. I don't know how much the Fed alleviating them of so many billions. Is it really making a difference to these banks? I mean, there are many trillions of dollars of this toxic junk on these banks' books.
I think they're on number 3, and I already bought 1.4, so you get 2.6 to go to relieve them all. And the American public's on the hook for it, because they don't tell you how much they bought until later, and they don't tell you what they paid for it. They don't tell you what the market rate is on it, which was probably zero. I mean, the whole thing is a giant Ponzi scheme, a scam. It's unbelievable. And the American people sit tight for it because the only people understand what is going on are the people on Wall Street and in banking and people like me who graduated from there.
Oh,
and,
indeed.
You know, I was dead because I tell all their secrets.
Indeed.
And
Bob,
and,
I'm afraid we're out of time. My goodness. Anyway, I mean, we've got this horrible Ponzi scheme going on. We have the worst financial crisis, certainly in my memory. I'm sure yours. And they keep compounding bad policy with more bad policy. And the end result at some point that ordinary mortals can't predict, maybe they can't, but at some point there is real, real trouble coming. And always, ordinary people are hurt the most. The fat cats have got their money stashed in tax havens. They'll be sitting pretty when ordinary people suffer. Bob, I look forward to another round of this next month.
You got it. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
Bob. And join us, of course, next Thursday, always 11 a.m. Eastern. Weekends, 1 p.m. Eastern. Make it a regular habit.